How would you respond if somebody put a curse on you? Would you try to have the curse removed? Or would you pretend the curse never happened in the first place? After all, these things only have power if you believe in them, right? Our guest today has several stories that involve curses. Do you believe these curses have power? Or are they just rumors without any weight? We'll let you decide. On the H-Files. Today, on Homespun Hates. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Homespun Hates. I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And today on the show, it's our third H-Files episode of the season, H-Files episode 9.
Aren't you guys loving the family ghost stories? I'm loving them so much.
I love them so much. And we are hitting different regions of the world from what we've ever talked about before on this show. And today we have joining us Tafara in Munich. That's in Germany, if you don't know that.
Bavaria.
Or Bayern, as they would say.
How do you say Munich in German? Is it München?
München.
What?
München.
That's cool. I can't even make those sounds.
I don't. I'm an American English speaker, so I don't know if I've got it right, but what I remember is it's München. So the okay. H sound is the CH, and the U has the umlaut over it, so it's Mün, not Moon.
München. Cool.
Granted, my German teacher was also from East Tennessee, so he may or may not have taught me the pronunciation correctly. Who knows? But calling in from München.
Even if you're not saying it correctly, I'm going to say it that way for the rest of my life. I've only been there once, but I had no idea. I was looking at the sign on the station. I'm like, where is that? You what?
Yes.
München?
What? This isn't here.
It's a beautiful place, though. I loved it when I was there.
I have been given an invitation by Courtney to come visit. And Courtney is Tafara's wife. She is the person that introduced us to our guest today. And she's also the person that introduced Diana and me to each other. Courtney was my neighbor back in Daytona Beach, and she went to school with Diana. So that's the connection. This is like, it's all coming around. That's what the H-Files is doing. It's all right? Coming around. It's coming around to the beginning.
This is what we give to you, listeners. This is a good round trip from the paranormal and back again.
Yes, from when Diana and I were little paranormal babies.
And when we knew each other as Courtney's cool neighbors.
Yes. And now we're getting to talk to Courtney's cool wife. So
very cool. Yes.
Yeah, so Tafara is amazing. She is going to be sharing some stories from Zimbabwe. And they are family stories. Of course, she does have some of her own stories as well that she's going to mix in there. And it was a fabulous interview. She really just dug deep and found all sorts of stories that she didn't even know she was going to tell us. So I really hope that you guys enjoy this. But first, I have to tell you about something, Diana.
I've been hearing allusions to this for a few days now, and I'm really still kind of like pondering what it could possibly mean, but I'm coming up with nothing.
All right, so long and short of it, I got a potato stuck up my nose.
Like a whole potato? Like a small one? Or like a slice of one? A cooked one? Mm-hmm. Okay, right, from the beginning. I'm so confused.
Okay, yeah, so I made roasted new potatoes, you know, the little potatoes.
Oh, yes, they're so cute. Yeah, they're so cute.
So I made those for dinner. This is Wednesday night, right before Hap Keto. I go do Hap Keto. I've talked about it before, but what that is, in case you don't know, imagine a combination of Taekwondo and dirty street fighting. If those two had a baby, that would be Hap Keto.
How dirty.
I'm sore from last night because we were throwing each other.
Oh, ooh, that sounds dirty.
Yeah, it was fun. It was so fun. Yeah, dirty as in, you know, with Taekwondo, it's very based on like Olympics and you have to have your kicks just so and your arms just so. And Hap Keto, it's like you get in there and you do it however you can. Hmm. But it's a very fluid art. It's like, oh, well, you're short, so you go under. You just get in there however you can.
I gotcha.
And we learn a lot of pressure points and we learn not so much about like, oh, kick just this way, but like, here's your center of gravity. Here's how you move. This part of your body can do this. This part of your body can do that. So it was before I was getting ready to go. And of course, you know, when you go into this class to train for this type of thing, you want to make sure that your entire body is
not going to have any distractions. I'm trying to eat like way in advance of class because I want my stomach to settle in time because we have to do like 100 crunches before we even get started. And there have been times where I'm close to throwing up. I'm like trying to get my body ready and my son comes out of nowhere because he's just finished his food and he's all excited, right? Because he's just finished dinner and he wants dessert and he comes up and he jumps on me just as I had shoved a potato in my mouth. I don't know if you've ever studied the anatomy of, well, you have, Diana. You've got your chiropractic
studied a lot
background.
Of anatomy. Yeah.
You know how the mouth is formed. You know, there's a passageway. There's a passageway in the back between your mouth and your nose. Mm-hmm. And that's how you're able to form nasal sounds is you close that off when you make that N or that M sound. But otherwise, it's open, right? Am I getting that right? Or is it the other way around?
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. That's where a lot of people discovered that existed this year because the COVID-19 test has to go in through the nose to get to the back of the throat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what you're experiencing right there.
Right. Yes. That's why it has to go so far. Your nose and your mouth are connected. Anyway, so he jumps on me and the potato goes in every hole it can.
Every hole it can. Into your flesh windows, everyone.
Every one of my gosh. Yes, thank you. So
you're welcome.
So pieces go in my lungs.
Oh, fun.
I have to cough that. So I'm like coughing. I get all the potatoes out of my lungs. Some of it goes down my throat. So, you know, at least some of it landed where we're supposed to. Yeah. And part of it went up my nose. I'm coughing and coughing. I'm coughing up potato chunks. And I'm like, okay, good. I got those out. No. But I could still feel it. I know what that is because I once got a pickle stuck up there when I was in middle school. That was not fun. So anyway, I'm like, shit, I got a potato up my nose. I got to go to have keto because it hurts like hell. Let me tell you, pickles and potatoes, they hurt in your nose. You've had that COVID test. It's like that, but constant and like covered in vinegar or butter or salt.
Yikes. Oh, no.
So I got this potato up my nose and I'm like, fuck, right? I'm like sneezing. I'm like trying to blow my nose. I'm trying to get it out because I know once it gets in there, it's really hard to get out. When I had that pickle incident, it was up there for hours. That was a miserable day of school.
No.
Still pickled too. It was really uncomfortable. Yeah. So anyway, I got this potato up my nose and I'm just blowing. And finally, I get the potato out. It took me a minute to figure out that it was the same chunk because it came out mashed.
Can we call this episode the least efficient way to mash potatoes?
Yeah, sure. My nose mashed it up.
That's horrible. Oh, how miserable. I'm so sorry you chewed with your nose. What day was that?
This was Wednesday, right before class. Okay. But I was so glad I got it out. I went to class. I went in the dojong, went inside and said, hey, everybody, guess what just happened? Oh, that was my mashed potato story.
I would rather have a mashed potato in my nose than a raw potato, I think, overall.
A mashed potato is pretty salty, though, but it's harder to get out because at least it like squished out as opposed to like I said, that pickle was up there. I mean, it was just like a chunk when it came out.
This is more like a Play-Doh extruder, huh?
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. Your nose is like a Play-Doh extruder. Okay. Next time you have lost your potato masher...
In one flesh window and out the other.
Right. You know what? And if it goes in your nose, you don't need to add salt because that's an artisan salt.
Hypertonic solution. Is that like the coffee made from beans that are pooped out by lemurs?
Exactly.
It's like that, except potato that's been mashed by your nasopharynx and extruded through your nostril. This is culinary art right here. We're talking
really
about kitchen
is.
Alchemy right now. You thought kitchen it. Witchcraft was just good cooking. Oh, boy.
Oh, no. It's a whole new level. I don't know if this happens to everybody. This seems to be a thing for me. I'm always getting shit stuck up there. So watch out. Close that nasal pharynx when you eat.
Close that nasal pharynx. Hey, Becky, do you remember last year when you bought me that super cool spooky goth pin that was like cute? Little ghost with boobies and it said boobs.
I saw that and I thought of you, Diana.
It so perfectly describes my life. That's a pin specially designed by Ectogasm Art. So listeners, you have a chance to support Becky and Diana, plus another excellent artist, Ectogasm Art, at ectogasm.net. Go to her website, enter the code HAINTS, you know how to spell it, H-A-I-N-T-S.
All caps.
For 10% off every order over $35.
It's like ectoplasm, but with a G instead of the PL.
Ectogasm.net. And thank you.
Well, completely unrelated. Let's bring on Tafara.
Her stories are so much more clean than what we just said now.
They're still pretty feisty. You're going to enjoy this, guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Today is our third H-Files episode of season three. Wait, are we in season three, Diana?
Shocker, right?
Oh my gosh.
I also thought this was episode four, but I'm not keeping as good of track as you are.
So in keeping with our H-Files tradition, we are talking to people who have family stories that have been passed down to share with us. And this has been wonderful for us. Last episode, we heard great stories from the Philippines and the Pacific. And today we have a guest who is calling in from Munich, which is awesome. We're really excited we were able to work out that time zone difference. Diana, you're the math person. I struggle with math. So I'm really proud of myself that I figured that out.
You did well. Yes.
Thank you. In Munich, we are talking to Tafara, who has stories from Zimbabwe. Tafara, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us. I'm so delighted to finally meet you. I have been hearing so much about you for so long. I know that you and Diana have known each other for a while now. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I feel quite honored.
Definitely. So Tafara, I understand that you actually have recently written a screenplay. Is that correct?
Yes, I have. It's called Tokyo Happening. It's a psychological thriller about love and sex and the meaning of intimacy, and set, of course, in Tokyo. I'll leave you intrigued, and hopefully you'll get to see it once it's produced.
When that does get out there, let us know so we can make sure that we notify our listeners about that and share it in our show notes. That's very exciting. So, Tafara, usually the way this works is I know the stories ahead of time and I keep Diana in the dark, but this time it's kind of reversed.
Well, I don't know the story either, Becky.
I thought I was sharing a different story about what happened to my mother once, but it's actually something that I had experienced, the story that I'm sharing today.
Oh!
Just to give you a bit of background first, I'm born and raised in Zimbabwe. Most families in Zimbabwe are Christian. That's the dominating religion in the country. However, they maintain their traditions and have found a way to marry their traditions and their religious beliefs. So when someone dies, we hold a memorial, but then we celebrate the memorial by going through traditional protocols to celebrate that person's life. So in my family, my mother's, there's six in their family. I had an older uncle, Uncle Rob, who was present at the time. My mum, my aunt and Uncle Rob, and his wife, in terms of the adults. And then my two cousins and myself. So we were going there to celebrate the last sibling who had passed away. Uncle Joe, the youngest, died quite young from alcohol abuse. It was quite tragic. If there were ever a person to encompass YOLO before YOLO was a thing, this man was it. He did really well in life. I didn't understand why he drank himself to death. He seemed really unhappy in his marriage. And in hindsight, after talking to my father, who knew him as well, he was like, you know, Joe never reacted to women when we went out. Like, you would say, hey, did you see her legs? He'd be like, yeah, you know, he'd be really polite and sort of distanced. And I just thought, you know, it makes a lot of sense. Out of six siblings, I'm sure one of them is going to turn out to be gay. I mean, the likelihood is pretty high.
Right.
So Uncle Joe, we were there to celebrate his life. And this is many, many, many years later, because he died when I was 8 years old. And we went to Uncle Rob's house. And Uncle Rob, the hierarchy works like so, because Uncle Rob is the eldest. He is the head of the family. He is the patriarch. However, in the Shona culture, it's a strong matriarchal society, at least in our family. It's extremely felt. So my aunt and my mother were there also representing the other side of the family, right? And the tradition is Uncle Rob brews a beer over a period of 3 days, a traditional beer, and it looks like this milky, hoppy substance that's not quite refined, but it's very penetrative in its taste, you know, and it's something that you kind of steal yourself before you sip it.
So it doesn't sound very good.
I'm there.
It's not my cup of tea. It's not my cup of tea. It's the libation, as it were. There's this beer that he's made, and we're sitting there in his large living room in a circle. All everyone's on the couches around. And we're talking about, just, you know, chatting, and then Uncle Rob starts. It's not a prayer exactly, but it has the weight of a prayer. Do you know how a room kind of feels heavier when this prayer is being commenced? It has that feeling. But the way he's speaking is that he's speaking to Uncle Joe. So we're all sitting there in the circle, and I notice there's a chicken tied up next to my uncle on the floor. Its feet are bound, and it's just sitting on the floor. So he starts talking to Uncle Joe, and he's saying, you know, this year has been like this, and we've been doing this. I hope you're well. And we all pass around this cup of the beer and all take a sip. And he says, we hope you're happy with the way we've been living life. And please express yourself through this chicken. And he proceeds to untie the chicken. My uncle doesn't have any animals like this. He has some dogs, but that's about it. We had gotten this chicken that morning from the market, didn't know it from Adam. And the chicken didn't make a sound. It didn't do chicken things. It behaved like a dog. It stood up, it looked around, it walked over and sat back again beside my uncle. Like, this is nice. And the tradition goes, or the belief goes, if the animal is noisy and unruly, then my uncle is unhappy with something. But if it is peaceful like this, it's a very good omen. But you could feel it. You could almost, it was so unnerving, I got goosebumps. And I'm not a religious person at all. I am agnostic. So this was like, maybe there is something out there that I'm a part of that I don't fully understand, or I didn't fully understand. And since then, I've perceived my culture through different eyes. And I've been learning different things that, I don't know, it's just very fascinating.
How uncommon is that for a chicken to just be completely chill with somebody when it's unbound? That probably doesn't happen at every ceremony.
No, not ever. I've never seen a still chicken in my life.
Right.
And I hate chickens. I really detest the things. I felt like I could get up and pet it. It was really strange.
So you mentioned that since this experience, you've sort of been exploring some more aspects of the folklore from the area that you grew up in. What sort of things have you learned?
Okay, my father's American. And funny enough, we were chatting over his engagement to my mom. And she had never told me that there'd been this weird ass ceremony that he had gone through during this engagement. So he was in Zimbabwe with her, and they just took him away from her, like, you need to be in separate places for a time or something. And it was about whether my grandparents would accept my father essentially as her husband, her future husband. And they needed to ask the ancestors if they would accept him as a future husband. So this was a big fucking deal. My grandparents had this enormous house. And all of a sudden, my father's driven to the house and he's sitting in the back of a truck. And it's all very kind of stereotype Africa, you know, kind of thing. But he's driving to a mansion, as it were. It's not like a lot of people think, okay, Africa, you're going to a little hut somewhere. No, it was a few acres of land and swimming pool and such, a double-story house. And so this humongous living room was filled with people. He didn't know all these relatives that he had never seen. And he was made to sit on the opposite end of the circle on the floor. And my mother was then led in with other women and sat on the opposite end of him. And she did not look at him. She did not acknowledge him. Just like, the urgent is not there, you know? And then they brought in this old man and this really old woman. And they entered, they sort of shuffled into the middle of the room. They weren't wearing anything extravagant. They looked like they were sort of, might have been hand workers or something. And they were then plowed with beer, this traditional beer, which they always sort of swirl around before they drink, because you have to mix that. Otherwise, I don't know, you're going to be fucked as fuck. You know, you're not going to know your name. So they drink this like crazy. In order to belch, they start belching these long, long, crazy, rumbulous sounds just escaping into the room, just filling both of them, the man and then the woman and the man and the woman. And Dad is looking up at my mom like, what the hell have you brought me into? Like, what is this shit? And my mom is just, don't look at me, don't look at me. And this is so that they could empty their bodies, empty their chambers so that the ancestors can enter them.
Okay.
And then the ancestor speaks through them. There was something that had happened that was very bad. My father had given my mother his grandmother's ring, like, as an engagement ring. And this was a big problem. This was a very big problem because they felt that my father had no right to do this. They wanted to know, does this grandmother really feel that it's okay that my mother has this ring? So
that's a very good point.
It was, yeah, they never got married anyways in the end. So maybe the ancestors knew. Maybe they knew something, and I maintain it's a very good thing my parents never got married.
Wow.
Oh, interesting. So you don't know what they said. You don't know what the ancestors said when they came forward.
Not, I can't recall specifically what they said. Hopefully your listeners can fill them in imaginatively.
I would love to, like, just kind of imagine what this must have looked like with so many
people
inside.
Yeah, there was a rockery in the back and the gazebo at the top of this, like, I don't know how many meters high this rockery was in this gazebo. It was this dense vegetation but landscaped, and there was a little vineyard and a greenhouse and this humongous pool with these lion fountains coming out of the wall. I loved growing up there. It was really beautiful. And our punishment was to weed that garden, which would take us a week. Like the six of us.
So what stories has your mom told you? Because I know that there are some.
There is an experience that she had. It's not quite folklore. It's more like a ghost story, if anything.
Perfect. Perfect.
This was quite some time ago, I think. Between 2001 and 2005, max. Her boyfriend had passed away in not the best way. He had drowned, unfortunately, because he'd drunk too much. He was a very bad alcoholic. But they weren't together at the time. But anyway, he had lived in the house during that time. He died somewhere else, but he had lived in the house. So there were ties for him, I think, to the house.
This is the same house you mentioned earlier?
No, my mother's house in Harare. I'm born in Bulawayo, which is near where Shaka Zulu's from. If anyone knows anything about Shaka Zulu, Harare is the capital. And we live in this four-bedroom bungalow house. It's just my mom and I and the maid and the gardener, but they live in a cottage at the back. So it's just her and I. And in Zimbabwe at the time, these blackouts started happening. And I wasn't there. I was at a friend's house or something. I just wasn't there. It happened on two occasions. The first time, she was in the living room and there had been a blackout, and she had fallen asleep on the sofa, and she had this little candle on, and she woke up because she felt this rush, like a chill, like out of nowhere. And she wakes up and there are just hundreds of shadows moving around the room, too fast to discern you cannot see a face, you just know they are shadows of beings. And she grabbed her father's Bible. My mother does not go to church. She does not pray like that. We don't pray over meals. We don't she can't quote a Bible verse to me for shit. But she grabbed this Bible and she held it to her chest. She did not beg God. She begged her father to watch over her. Because of our traditions and our, do you see? She's holding a Bible and she's asking my grandfather, take care of me, watch over me, not God. So then it was like they were gone. She just squeezed her eyes shut and just opened them and then they were gone. And the weird thing was the maid said something like that had happened to her in the back in the cottage. And there's literally a tennis court between the house and the cottage at the back. So you know the distance. So that was the first occasion. Second occasion, she was in bed by herself. And when her bed is facing her, she's got a ensuite bathroom and a walk-in closet. They're parallel to each other like this. So she is facing that way and she left the light on in the bathroom and the door slightly ajar. And she woke up with a start and there was this man in the doorway, standing in the light. He was just standing there and she was freaking out and he was walking towards her and then he just fell on top of her. But then he was nothing. You know what I mean? It was just like he had just evaporated. And then she just didn't want to talk about it.
And she was home alone at the time when this happened?
I was there. But there's a bedroom between hers and mine. So I was completely unaware of what was happening.
Does she think this may have been her ex-boyfriend?
Yeah, because there was his family was really causing some disruption in our lives because they felt that they were entitled to certain things. A lot of people think because my mom was a single parent, she must have been dependent on him, whereas it was the other way around. So when he died, they thought, oh, how come you're driving this car? That must have been his car. That's ours. We want it now, kind of thing. So there's this tension and this battle. And so a lot of people believe that they got some sort of witch woman or anangas, or what you call it, to put a curse on her or to make life difficult for her. She thinks she has a curse on her to this day because the first boyfriend to die, her next boyfriend also died. And like just really, really suddenly in a car accident. And he was in his 30s. And then the love of my mom's life died in his sleep very suddenly. And then she had dated her next boyfriend, but they never got too serious and remained friends. And she thought, okay, he's fine. He also died very suddenly. So to this day, she will not date anyone. I won't bring it up. It's really strange to talk about now, actually. I don't really talk about it very often.
That is terrifying. Has she gone through any steps to try and remove this curse?
She doesn't, put so much in it like that. I guess it's one of those things of, what they say about voodoo. If you believe in it, you give it power. If you don't, it won't hurt you, kind of thing. So I'm not sure. I think when it suits her, she says it's a curse. And when it doesn't, she says it's something else. I'm not sure. I think it's just a terrible, terrible string of circumstances. I like to believe that. But maybe that's my westernized mind thinking. Who knows? A part of me thinks that maybe, vielleicht, könnte sein, maybe. Could be dark forces, who knows? You're making me realize how much really dark, creepy stuff is lurking in our family history.
Sorry, we tend to do that to people.
And then there's this story, and then there's that story. Oh, yeah. There was a family feud between my Uncle Rob and the sisters after my grandmother died. Because my grandmother did not leave everything to my uncle like he felt like it should have been because he was the only male left in the family, which was absolute nonsense. Because that's not how a family works. So the sisters got the gas station and he got the other gas station. Fair is fair. It's fine. So he just started, basically my Uncle Rob showed up in a pair of shorts, uncombed hair, looking like a hobo to my grandmother's funeral and demanding certain things and just being belligerent. And it just caused a huge rift in the family, and we didn't speak to Uncle Rob for many years. And there was a time when we were made as kids. I think I must have been maybe 8 years old or so. We were made to wash in this substance, the strange pink, like it was a Pepto-Bismol pink substance. But we couldn't, we weren't allowed to wash in the bathtub or any, it had to be in this, one of these 1800s tin tubs. We were washing and we were told that it was to protect us from Uncle Rob, because he had gotten somebody to do certain things to wish ill on our family. So I don't know.
It must have worked.
The way you speak of, you know, your mom must have a curse on her because of the feud between her and her boyfriend's family and then Uncle Rob. In the context of the culture, what does it mean to put a curse on somebody?
It means going to a witch doctor, as it were, and saying, I will pay you this amount of money or acquire this and this for you if you do such and such, if you can make them suffer or make them sick.
Okay. So there always has to be like an intermediary. These people don't do it themselves. They have to go to somebody.
Comparatively, Zimbabweans are less intense about this belief. They're more religious. They're more Christian, far more Christian than other regions of Africa.
I was still fascinated by the idea of going to somebody and buying a curse for somebody. Is this person somebody who's respected in the community? Is it secret? Is it kind of, do they hang out a sign? Curses performed?
I'll just say this, that a lot of Zimbabweans believe some people in power or people of financial wealth or gains have done something nefarious or have offered pieces of themselves or their spirits to the entities or the ancestors to, you know, to get for their gains. And at some point, you're going to have to pay up. And whatever that looks like when you pay up is one thing or the other.
I think that's kind of a universal belief. I find that interesting that in a way, you say witch doctor. I think of that as like someone who's sort of a religious practitioner, somebody who's there to help. The idea that you can purchase curses from them seems, it's more like hiring a hitman.
Yeah, I think it's the same as having your white witches and your dark witches. Essentially, there's some that are healers. They actually call them traditional healers or witch doctors. So there's a differentiation, definitely.
I see, between healer or witch doctor.
Yeah. There's some others out to just, you know, profit.
Right. Oh, I think we definitely have that here, too. It's just not as out in the open, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's always just been just hearsay. I've never been able to tangibly put anything to it other than hearsay and stories. So maybe it is just stories and people just get riled up and caught up in this fantasy.
But if the story, if it gives it power by the belief in it, then
exactly.
Maybe it kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Now that we've had you go down this dark, deep memory lane, do you have other stories that are coming to mind that you want to share with us?
I think those are all the skeletons I can concretely remember. I do believe in the spirits communicating or trying to communicate or connect. And my father's side of the family, we have Native American roots as well. And my great-great-grandmother, she was like, I don't know what you would call her, but she would not claim to see the future, but I don't know, have connections. So when I was a child, my mom would always ask me, what did you dream? We'd always talk about our dreams in the morning. And my dreams took a turn when Uncle Joe died, my favorite uncle. I dreamt a very violent, visceral dream of him hanging off a cliff leading to hell, and it was my responsibility to save him, and I was the child me, and I couldn't. I'm actually tearing up thinking about it, because it was, I remember the sound of the fire, and it's terrified me. And I asked my mother, what good could that possibly mean? Because, you know, they always used to tell me, like, if you dream someone dies in your dream, it means they'll live longer, things like that. But I always wondered if they were just little comforts for a child. But the dream that really stuck with me was after my grandmother died. It was really just 2 days or something after she died, because she hadn't gotten buried yet. And it was in her house that she died in her bed. And we were in her, with three girls, of course. There's a 3-year age difference between us. And I'm the middle one. And we were sleeping in my grandmother's humongous bed in her room. Why would you put three little children up there? I do not know, after the woman just died. But anyway, and I dreamt. Then I woke up and I saw myself sleeping there, and I walked around the bed and down the hall, and her room was at the end of the hall, and then there are rooms on either side and then the stairs going down to the ground floor. And she was standing at the top of the stairs facing me, but I couldn't see her face. And the belief is, whenever you dream about a dead person, you can't really see their faces. And it was the same with Uncle Joe, because I could only see his fingers clinging to the edge, but not see him fully. She was there, just standing, and I could hear her crying. And I'm like, why are you crying, you know? I'm trying to talk to her. And we, Mbuya is what we call our grandmothers. I'm like, Mbuya, Mbuya, what's going on? And she just sort of, it didn't seem like she was moving very fast, but it didn't seem like she was moving slowly. But suddenly, somehow, she was right there in front of me. She was at the far side initially, and all of a sudden, she was right there, but there's only blackness from her shoulders up. And then I just woke up. And it was one of those when you wake up when you feel like you've fallen into your body, you know, like one of those.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very strange experience.
What do you think that meant? Do you have any interpretations?
I haven't thought about it in a very long time. I used to think she was sad that she left, but I think that was wishful thinking. I'm not sure. I think that's what you'd want to think, that that's the only reason she'd be sad. But there was so much going on in our family at the time. There was so much that was broken and so much unrest because of her death. Or due to her death. So it could have been that. Could have been just because of the sad situation. And I was oblivious to the magnitude of it at the time. It was serious unrest. So it was maybe an ancestor, like our tradition believes, saying, I'm not happy with this.
And your dream about Uncle Joe, did that happen prior to his death?
No. That happened actually years after he had passed away. But it felt like he had just died when I'd woken up. Like, it was very strange. It still gets me, as you see. So I don't know what that meant. I think that's the reason. It's like, I don't know what that meant. I can't begin to interpret that. There's no closure in it. Whereas Mbuya, I can somehow figure that out. Yeah, this has been the best unpaid therapy session ever. Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
Gosh, you guys. You're not the best.
This is great. Farah, thank you for telling all these stories.
That was awesome. That was great. That was so much cool stuff. I feel like I learned so much about you. And you are an amazing storyteller.
Thank you.
That was amazing.
It was fun. I enjoyed myself.
Everybody, you've been listening to Tafara calling in from Munich, telling some stories from Zimbabwe and her home, her family. And we really appreciate it. That was absolutely lovely. If you like what you've been listening to, please follow us on Instagram at Homespun Haints. You can also check us out on Facebook at Homespun Haints, Twitter at Homespun Haints, Pinterest at Homespun Haints. And we do have a new YouTube channel. We do not yet have a custom URL, but if you go to YouTube and do a search for Homespun Haints, you can find us, and we would really appreciate you subscribing. You can also check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/ homespun Haynes. Also, please be sure you check out the show notes for this episode where we will include Diana is our researcher. She is going to research anything and everything she can that's publicly available that relates to Tafara's story, so you can get some more info. And you can find our show notes at homespunhaints.com because we like to brand. So.
And if you're listening in the future, we'll have a link to the film that Tafara wrote the screenplay for.
Yeah, hopefully it will be something soon.
Thank you again, Tafara, and everybody. Hopefully.
You'll have a spooky day.
Homespun Haints is hosted by Becky Kielemnick and Diana Doty and produced by The Concept Spot. Editing and music by Becky Kielemnick. Show notes by Diana Doty. If you have a ghost story and you'd like to be considered as a guest for this podcast, please visit our website at homespunhaints.com/submit.